Good morning. Tis the season, and tis the season to be talking about the season, but I'm going to actually talk about more of the same kinds of things as what Mike was talking about and some of the other stuff that's going on than a lot of the other stuff. So, on the last week of work that I had for the year, don't worry, I start back up again in January. But for the last week of work of the year, I was a little stressed out. Because I knew that I'm going to work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then, on Saturday, we had Christmas with my parents, and then we had Christmas at Chuck and Lori's house. And then today, there's Christmas stuff going on. Tomorrow, there's Christmas stuff going on. And then after that, my week's already booked. Because of all the stuff going on. But at the end of all of this, once we actually get to the point where we're ready for all of these different Christmas gift exchanges and giving of gifts and everything, and you get there, a great and wonderful time is had by all. You know, from getting a present that was apologizing to me before I ever opened it. Thank you, Anne. I decided the apology was actually less for me and more for my wife, but, you know, we'll not worry about that. Going to the Monaco's and having the White Elephant Gift Exchange, getting a chance to play a variety of board games yesterday. I played a lot. And then there's a little bit more of that. For the gift exchange that we did at my parents' house, we swapped names. And so it was my job to sit around, okay, not actually sit around, but sit around and think about what is it that Sam Babb would really like to have? Because that's who I'm responsible for. And there's a certain part of this where that is a great thing to be able to just sit there and go, okay, what does this person want? And it's not always easy. Some people are especially difficult to shop for. And some people are easier to shop for. But this idea of sitting there and thinking about what is the people want. So all of this is going on and still going on because, as I said, I've still got a couple more days of it to go here. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a wonderful experience because of all of the people that I'm sharing it with. I like to play board games. And yesterday, I got to play Sea of Clouds with Mike and Sam, and I got to play, we didn't play test this at all with Nathaniel and Omri and Keturah and Oliver, and I feel like I'm still missing one person out of that, but, and I got to play Captain Sonar with Chuck and Mike and Josh and Thad and Nathaniel and Oliver and Omri, and, and my son Titus. Yeah, him too. Both times, he's the one I was forgetting. Sorry, son. What really makes that an enjoyable experience isn't the game itself, isn't the mechanics of the game, even though a lot of time and effort put in it. What really makes a White Elephant a gift exchange fun isn't the exchanging of the gifts. It's an important part of it, but it's the people that you're doing it with. And that is a huge deal. That's part of why I'm like, okay, so it's good for me to have an opportunity to sit there and think about what does this person want? What is it that's going to make this day fun for that person? You know, for Mike, it was making sure that Anne got to open the gift, which she did, so everything was great. I got to open the gift from Bob, which was great for me. I loved it. And I ended up with it at the end. I'm all happy. But, you know, this thinking about each other, what's going to make things enjoyable for the other people is very important. And it's not something that's going to end here and now. It is frequent that the idea of heaven is actually likened to the idea of a feast, and specifically a marriage feast. If we look at Revelation 19, verses 6 through 9, this is what it says. Then I heard what seemed to be the voice of a great multitude, like the roar of many waters and like the sound of mighty peals of thunder crying out. Hallelujah, for the Lord our God, the Almighty reigns. Let us rejoice and exult and give Him the glory. For the marriage of the Lamb has come, and His bride has made herself ready. It is granted her to clothe herself with fine linen, bright and pure. For the fine linen is the righteous deeds of the saints. And the angel said to me, write this. Blessed are those who are invited to the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he said to me, these are the true words of God. And when you think about a feast, it's the people around you that really make it the most enjoyable experience of all. There have been times and places where I have gone to a feast and I had great food, but I didn't care for the company. I didn't care for the feast. I didn't care for the party because I didn't have fun. Because I didn't care about the people that were there. And they didn't care that much about me. There are parties you can go to where there's an entirely different focus than anything that you're focused on. But one of the great things about these parties, and the ones that we've already done, and the ones that I have coming up, is that everybody is really kind of focused on the same basic idea. But it's going to be even more so like that when we get to heaven. Because each and every one of us is going to be there for the same reason. With the same purpose, with the same goal, with the same thoughts, with the same attitude. It's all going to be a great deal more harmonious there than anything that we have here in this world. And everyone will be given gifts that they desire, gifts that they want. Because we will all be that bride receiving the gift of her husband. So, there's a lot of thoughts and ideas that go into this idea. And in thinking about these parties, these people that you hang out with, we sometimes forget how much of a difference it makes, the people that you hang out with. But it does. The other day, my daughter Keturah said a very interesting thing. She had Zion sitting on her lap, and she said something along the lines of, Zion's becoming a mini Keturah. Which is true, by the way, just in case you're curious. It is totally true that Zion is becoming more and more like Keturah as time passes. Why? Because Zion spends a great deal of time with Keturah. Because any time that I want to go out on a date with my wife, it's almost inevitable that I leave Zion with Keturah. Sometimes it's Titus and Keturah, but Keturah is the most frequent. And so Zion is left with Keturah a lot. And Zion loves her big sister. She likes to sit on her big sister's lap. She likes to see what Keturah is doing. She likes to try to do Keturah's homework for Keturah, which is more than Keturah does, so go with that. But as a result of this, Zion sees Keturah as someone to become, someone to be like. May she always do more homework. But Zion really is becoming more like Keturah. And then another time and a different day, but Titus had just done something for me, and I looked at Titus and I said, thank you, Titus, for doing that without complaining, whining, or making me ask you twice. Actually, this was yesterday as he was making stuff for Julie to bake. But we get into the car, and Zion just breaks down in tears. Why are you crying? And Keturah finds out, because I was done at that point with Zion. And Keturah finds out that Zion wanted me to tell her thank you. Even though Zion knew she had not done anything to get that thank you, she wanted one. Because her brother had gotten one. Oh, that's right, it was Lydia. I did say thank you to Lydia. I do it to both of them. I do it to all four of my children every so often. Because it's important that I let them know that they've done something good, right, and all that. Because I like to give them that positive reinforcement so they know the good stuff that they're doing. But the other part of this is that kind of reaction from Zion is the kind of thing that I'm looking for from my children. I want them to want to be praised for doing good things. Because then they're more likely to do those good things. And this all goes along back into that idea of the people we hang out with, we want to make them happy. And the more we hang out with them, the more we want to make them happy. And so we have this idea of what Christian fellowship is really about. We want to become those people where what we want to hear is, thank you. But not necessarily from the people around us, but from our Father who is in heaven. Jesus has a couple parables where part of the idea is the master says, well done, my good and faithful servant. And wouldn't it be great for God to look at us and say that on the day of judgment? Well done, my good and faithful servant. But the people who think that way are the people around us right now. Our fellow Christians are the others who want to hear that said. There are a lot of people in this world where that's not their desire. God knew this all the way back in the days of Noah when he said, every inclination of man's heart is evil all the time. And you go out in the world and it's easy to see that. There's sexual immorality all around us, and that's one of the big things being talked about, has been for years, but the direction keeps changing. So now what we see is all of the people who are complaining about the times when they were sexually harassed. And that's a big thing right now. But there's all sorts of other things. I know people who believe that it's okay to steal as long as you don't get caught. On my school campus just the other day, a teacher was out, had a substitute. It was a science teacher, and he had little cheap plastic sunglasses in his room, and he had prisms in his room, and he had tuning forks in his room, and he had slinkies in his room, and these were all for science experiments that he planned on doing with the kids. Well, those kids aren't going to be able to do those science experiments now, because someone decided to open up the boxes while the sub was in the room, and now there's no telling where most of the stuff is. But not everybody got caught. Those who didn't get caught, it's okay. This is the way that the world thinks. As Christians, this is not the way that we are or should think. On the other hand, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 9 through 11, Paul writes, "For God has not destined us for wrath, but to obtain salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us, so that whether we are awake or asleep, we might live with him. Therefore, encourage one another and build one another up just as you are doing." Paul says, as Christians, our goal is to build each other up. It's to encourage one another. It's to make each other better than what we were before. And sometimes it may seem like we're not doing a very good job of it. We all have our bad days. We all have our times when we're feeling off, when we may not be feeling the fellowship so much. And we may just want to be left alone. But that's one of the great things about coming to church where, you know what? You may want to be left alone, but you're getting a hug and a handshake and a how are you doing? And you've got the people around you encouraging you. You may not always be the encourager. Sometimes you might be the one who needs to be encouraged. But that's why it is important for us to have the fellowship one with another where we come together, because sometimes we all have those days. And we all need those times to get together, to be rejuvenated, strengthened, to be made better than what we were. And it is a great thing that we have that time and that opportunity. Solomon writes about this idea in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 4, verses 9 through 12, where he says, two people are better than one. Don't even need a qualification on that one. Two people are better than one. Because they can reap more benefit from their labor. For if they fall, one will help his companion up. But pity the person who falls down has no one to help him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they can keep each other warm. But how can one person keep warm by himself? Although an assailant may overpower one person, two can withstand him. Moreover, a three-stranded cord is not quickly broken. And this is all sorts of applications throughout Christianity, where this idea that if your brother sins, show him his errors, that he can continue on with his Christian walk. If there is temptation, it is much easier to resist it if there's two or three like-minded individuals. There are people who will try to lead you astray, but if you've got people around you who know, it is a much better thing. There was one Christmas party I went to just a little over a week ago. And one of those interesting things when I go to this Christmas party is there was drinking. Do you know how many drinks were offered to me? None. Not once. In fact, as soon as I got there, the very first thing the host said was, "Would you like some water or a soda or anything?" Because they knew already that this is who I am, this is the way that I am. And so then, knowing that, even the temptation to have a drink is not there. Because people know. And if you have other people with you who are the same, it makes it even easier. If we walk through life not alone but with others, it is so much easier for us to get to that great marriage feast at the end. One example of this is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You look at those three men, would they have had the strength to stand up to King Nebuchadnezzar if they'd come before him alone? Maybe, I don't know. But having the three of them together, all agreeing that this is the way things are, knowing God can save them if they want, whether or not he does, God can. Walking together, the three of them, they were that cord of three strands that is not easily broken. And as a result, they were thrown in the fiery furnace for their impudence. But when King Nebuchadnezzar looked there in the fire, he did not see three. He saw four. Because the truth of the matter was, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, even if they had come before the king individually, they still were not alone. They knew who they walked with. They knew who they associated with. They associated with the Lord. They walked with God. Even if they were by themselves, they were never alone because they knew that God was with them all the time. And the Lord made that clear to Nebuchadnezzar, the man who asked, "What God can save you from my hand?" He knew at the end what God could save from his hand. The Lord God, the same Lord God who is still with us here today. He is reliable, and in his strength, we are unbreakable. So one more thought to go with all of this. As Christians, we need to work together. One of the things that we did at the Monaco's party last night was we played a game called Captain Sonar. Now in Captain Sonar, there are four roles. There's the captain, who tells people what to do, for the most part. There's the first mate, who makes sure that everything is ready for when the captain wants it. There's the engineer, who breaks and fixes the ship. And then there's also the radar operator, who tries to figure out where the other people are so that you can shoot them. And other things. But you've got to work together. All four of those people got to be doing what they want. So like this one time when we're playing it, I was the engineer, Thad was the captain, and we're going through and we're getting close to the end, we're like, okay, we really want to get these people. And so real quick I look at Thad and say, "Okay, what do you want me to keep?" And he says, "Green." Which isn't actually what he meant. He thought I asked what I wanted to get rid of, or what he wanted me to get rid of. So he thought that I wanted to keep. Anyway, we got confused. Brief moment there. And that brief moment there of confusion could have lost us the game. It didn't. We still won. But you know, that was miscommunication on our part where we messed up, where we didn't work together the way that we ought to have. And it's just a little thing. But sometimes little things can become big things. And it can cause big issues. That minor miscommunication could have been the end of the game for us. We were lucky, we didn't. But as Christians, that's part of how these things work. We all have roles to fulfill. We all have jobs to do. We all have things to do to help the people around us. And it's up to us to make sure that we do exactly what it is that we're supposed to do. As another example, because Chuck was joking about it a little bit earlier, so we'll throw this one out there too. It is well known, and many people have probably never thought about it, some of us are known for talking a little bit longer than others. I'm not going to mention my name specifically, but just know some of us are known for talking a little bit longer. Other people are known for singing more songs than others. And it's good that some people really like to sing songs that much. And it's great. But the best part of this whole thing is that at the end of the day, as I'm standing up here speaking, I'm one of those people who can very fortunately look out at the audience. You know how many of you have checked your watch so far? I'm not going to mention how many. But a lot fewer than it could be. You know, for the most part here, when we're gathered together, that's not what we're doing, because we're not focused on the time. How much time is this taken out of my day? Unless we really have someplace that we've got to be. But it's important for us to remember and to think about what is the important things and where is it that I'm supposed to be. One of those things that I'm struggling with myself, and I do a better job of this than some of my children, but is wherever you're at, that's where you need to be. While we are here at church, having fellowship one with one another, it's where we need to be. We need to be aware of what is going on around us, what is being said, and how it is that we are either helping or hindering those around us. Because we are supposed to be doing those things to build each other up. We have each been given gifts to allow us to help each other. And we don't always think about what those gifts are, but the truth is, we have those gifts. Romans chapter 12, verses 3 through 8, Paul says, "For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. For as in one body we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function, so we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members one of another, having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, in proportion to our faith. If service, in our serving. The one who teaches, in his teaching. The one who exhorts, in his exhortation. The one who contributes, in generosity. The one who leads, with zeal. The one who does acts of mercy, with cheerfulness." Each and every one of us has been given gifts. And as Mike mentioned, these aren't like the white elephant gifts where you never know what you're going to get. We don't always know what we're going to get, but these are gifts given from the Father. And He gives to each and every one of us the gifts that we need, the gifts that we can use, but not for ourselves. We're given the gifts so that we can help one another. Chuck and Lori have a very nice house right now. And it is great that they use that so that we can come together and we can meet outside of normal church times. And that is a great gift that is used not just for ourselves, but for those around us. Whatever gifts we have been given, we need to remember they do not belong just to ourselves, but they belong to one another. So that we are able to help one another and build each other up. There is, of course, the reminder that this isn't the only gift God has given us. God has given us many gifts. He has, one, created us. From the very, very beginning, God never had to create us. It is a gift that we even exist. We don't always think about that one. The next gift that He gave from the very beginning was He gave men women. Women are one of the greatest gifts God has ever given us. Never hear me say otherwise. Other things that He's given wisdom. But perhaps the greatest gift He gave was His Son. He gave His Son to die for us so that we could have salvation and to live for all eternity. So you have a lot of people right now who will say, you know, Christmas starts with Christ. Well, the Word does. Most of the world's conception of it doesn't. But as we go through this season of giving gifts, receiving gifts, and thinking about gifts, I do think it is important that we remember the greatest gift ever given to us of all time, Jesus Christ, the Son of God, given to us to die for us. Born in December? Well, probably not. But definitely a gift that was given to us. And then after that, he also gave to us the church. Perhaps you don't always think about the people around you are a gift given to you by God. As I said, the gift that I got yesterday from the White Elephant was made by Bob. And I love every year getting those ornaments from Bob. And you know, it's one of those things where if you think about it, if it was not for the church, I may never have actually even known Bob. Or Tom. Or Chuck. And I could go through quite a lengthy list of people that I may never have known. There are a lot of families where you don't even know who your uncles are. Let alone cousins. Or people that you aren't related to by blood. You know, the truth of the matter is, you look at it, and a lot of us have relatively little in common. But we have one thing, the most important thing, in common. Jesus Christ died for us. And we have accepted that, and so we come together to remember that, and so our fellowship begins in Him. Our ability to be together starts with Him. And when we remember that, sometimes it makes it so much easier to deal with those who are having difficult days, those who may have some actual difficulties. But it is important for us to remember it is all because of Jesus' sacrifice. And so with this thought, one of the things that I do want us to think about is that God gave us His Son. What else is He going to keep from us? He gave us the most important thing. What is He going to deny to us? Jesus Himself makes this point when He talks about the idea, if you then know how to give good gifts, how much more your Father in heaven? And indeed, He tells us, ask and you will receive, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be opened. Jesus tells us that this is the case. And sometimes I think that we decide that we don't want to ask. We don't want to look. We don't want to knock. Because maybe God doesn't consider it important. But God never actually says that. Now, does that mean that God's going to give us every single thing we ask for? No. As a father, I know how this works. I do not give my children everything they ask for. Just ask them. They know. It happens. Because sometimes the things they ask for, I mean, seriously, how many dolls does one girl need? How many Build-A-Bears do you need to have in the house? All the girls are debating with me on this. You know, I could go on with this. You know, I could look at my son and say, how many video game systems do you actually need to have operating in the house? Of course, I did just get myself one, but, you know, not everything we ask for is something that we need. Not everything we ask for is something that we should get. And so God will occasionally not give us the things that we ask for because we do not need them and there's no reason for us to have them, or in some cases, it would be bad for us to have them. In the movie Fiddler on the Roof, there's a song, If I Were a Rich Man. And he says, in the song he says, God, would it destroy some great eternal plan if I were a rich man? But you know what would have happened at the end of that movie if he was a rich man? He would have had a lot harder time leaving everything behind when he had to move. Being poor was actually beneficial to him at the end. Not that you ever really think that or notice that in the entire movie, but it really is. He had very little that he had to take away with him from the place that he was leaving, from his home, as he was moving not just to the next town, but to an entirely different continent. New York, I think he was going to. But, you know, what is what? No, not necessarily, but it may be for your benefit that God does not grant you things. Nevertheless, that does not mean that we should not ask. Because our Father does want us to have good things. But of course, there is the one great thing that He truly desires for us all to have. Luke chapter 12, verses 32 through 34. Jesus says, "Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." God desires us to have not so much stuff here, but the greatest of all, treasure that will never fail, a feast that will never end, a place where there are no thieves, where moths do not destroy. And how much better does that sound than everything else in this world? What are we willing to give up for that? Well, the answer is, we don't have to give up anywhere near as much as we sometimes like to think. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Where is our treasure? Where do we place our hope? Where do we put ourselves? Where do we want to end up? And I will tell you, truly, there is no place I would rather be than with all of you for all of eternity. It is my fervent hope that we all continue to work and keep ourselves in the Lord so that we can spend an eternity together playing games, having fun, exchanging gifts, whatever they may be. So as we go forward through this season, do not forget the greatest gift, the gift of God's Son. Do not forget that every gift that we give is merely emulating what God has already done. And always strive to be one of those who helps to build each other up.